This is a Doc Network production. Welcome to the I Was Only Doing My Job podcast, Australia's military history told through the stories of those who've served. G'day friends, and welcome to the conclusion of the life, service, and legacy of Robert Harold Nimmo. But before we finish the story, a little housekeeping. There really isn't anything new to report from the last episode, as I am recording these back to back, but still, a huge thank you once again to everyone that has supported the podcast so far, and welcome to everyone who has just joined me on this adventure. Just as a reminder that the podcast now has a Discord server, I'm still setting it up, and there isn't a great deal there at the moment. There might be by the time this episode comes out, but there is an invite link in the episode description, and this will join the Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as the website, where you'll find my travels around Australia finding the myriad of memorials that dot the countryside, along with show notes, transcripts, and anything connected to the episodes that might not have made it into the show itself. Links of these will all be in the show description. So, without any further ado, a quick recap for those who are just joining us. Robert Harold Nimmo was born in 1893 in Oaks Park, Queensland, and was a part of the second intake of staff cadets to the newly raised Australian Military College Duntroon in the Federal Territory, now the Australian Capital Territory. His education was cut short with the commencement of the First World War, and he would go on to serve the duration of that conflict from December 1914 to February 1919, mostly in brigade staff positions. He would continue to serve in the interwar period as a brigade staff officer within cavalry units before serving the duration of the Second World War in staff roles at the brigade, division, corps, and army level, ending the war as the commanding officer of the 38th Infantry Brigade, the first unit of the post-war Australian Army, and Australia's contribution to the British Commonwealth Occupation Force before he was assigned to be the Chief Military Observer to the United Nations in Kashmir. But let's get to it. For historical context, in August 1947, Great Britain gave India its independence, but also partitioned the nation into two states, secular India and predominantly Muslim Pakistan. The rulers of some 562 princely states straddled both countries and were given the opportunity of either joining either India or Pakistan. By a mixture of diplomacy and coercion, India was able to observe all the princely states which fell within its boundaries. The second largest princely state, Jammu and Kashmir, commonly just referred to as Kashmir, within an area with an excess of 200,000 square kilometers, had a predominantly Muslim population despite being ruled by a Hindu dynasty. But after some hesitation, Kashmir's Hindu ruler opted to join India. Kashmir quickly erupted into turmoil, with various uprisings and massacres of Muslims in the town of Jammu by Hindus and Sikhs, and invasions by Muslim Pathan tribesmen. On the 26th of October, 1947, the Maharaja of Kashmir and Jammu, faced with the imminent fall of Singra, the chief city in Kashmir, to the Pathan tribesmen, signed a document handing Kashmir over to India in return for Indian military assistance. Lord Louis Mountbatten, the Governor-General of India and former classmate of Captain Hector Waller, Royal Australian Navy, accepted Kashmir's secession. Indian forces quickly repelled the Pathans from Singra, but fighting continued between the Indians on one side and the coalition of Muslim tribes and Pakistani forces on the other. The tension between India and Pakistan was in such by mid-1948, India and Pakistan were fighting a war of territory, with Kashmir itself being divided into areas controlled by both India and Pakistan. Fortunately, with the assistance and urging of the recently created United Nations, India and Pakistan held off from the brink of escalating a war and agreed to a ceasefire which came into effect from the 1st of January 1949. 1 year prior to the ceasefire, India had complained to the United Nations about Pakistan's involvement in what was now formerly Indian sovereign territory, and as a consequence, in January 1948, the United Nations Security Council established the United Nations Commission for India and Pakistan, or INSEP. However, during this initial period, as the hostilities between India and Pakistan escalated, UNSEP moved at a leisurely pace and did not reach the trouble spot for another 6 months. UNSEP was, however, able to act as an intermediary on the 1st of January 49 ceasefire, and on the condition that a plebiscite was held to determine Kashmir's future. It became very clear in the months that followed the ceasefire that it would be impossible to withdraw the opposing forces from the area, and additionally, the administrative officer, Admiral Chester Nimitz, who had been selected to administer the plebiscite, was never able to take up this post. The military advisor to UNSEP, Belgian General Maurice Delvaux, decided to concentrate on establishing a clear ceasefire line and demilitarized zone, and achieved the conference in Karachi, Pakistan, in July 1949. In August 1948, UNSEP had requested the use of military observers to enter the field to assist local commanders agree on the location of the ceasefire line on the ground and report of any breaches of the ceasefire. The challenge was significant, given the ceasefire line was 800 kilometers long, and much of it on rugged mountains over 4,000 meters above sea level. Military observers were stationed with troops on both sides and were to accompany them on their investigations to gather as much information as possible and report it to the chief military observer. 3 to 4 man observer teams were also stationed with Indian or Pakistani military units on either side of the ceasefire line. Each team would rotate from one side to the other to avoid partisanship, as on the part of the observers, they would recur by remaining too long with one army. UNSIP was unable to make further progress and was discontinued by early 1950. The observers, however, remained to monitor the ceasefire and in 1951 became an independent mission known as the United Nations Military Observer Group in India and Pakistan, or UNMOGIP. The UNMOGIP, gotta love UN abbreviations, headquarters alternated between India and Pakistan, spending 6 months of the year in each country. The mission's Indian headquarters was located in Srinagar, whilst the Pakistani headquarters was located in Rawalpindi, and I do apologize if I'm butchering these words. With the dissolution of UNSIP, a single mediator was appointed to attempt to effect a solution in Kashmir, following a number of candidates, including Admiral Nimitz. Sir Owen Dixon, a highly respected judge of the High Court of Australia, was finally selected. Sir Owen crisscrossed Kashmir's dangerous roads by jeep, attempting to find common ground for compromise between Indian and Pakistani leadership. These efforts proved fruitless, and Sir Owen declared his mission a failure and departed. Meanwhile, the officer commanding the United Nations observers in Kashmir, Canadian Brigadier General Henry Angle, was killed in a plane crash in July 1950. Through Sir Owen Dixon's involvement and influence, the Australian government was subsequently invited to send a replacement commander for the UN operation. The successfully nominated candidate was identified as, you know, our guest, Major General Robert Nimmo. Nimmo was appointed as the Chief Military Officer for UNMOGIP on the 28th of October 1950. He arrived in Kashmir to take command in November 1950 at almost 57 years old. 3 months later, he was joined by his wife and young children. From the very beginning, colleagues were quick to highly praise Nimmo's leadership style. Shortly after Nimmo's arrival in Kashmir, comments were made to the United Nations being fortuitous in gaining the services of so outstanding a soldier, who was a model of firmness, tact, and silence. Several years into Nimmo's command, one high-ranking UN official noted, "Mission successful and working excellently. Morale good, personal relations with local commanders excellent, and military observers of different nationalities get along well together, all largely due to the personal qualities of General Nimmo." Nimmo was hardworking and reputedly drove his staff hard. He was also an efficient administrator. Nimmo's credibility in Kashmir was further enhanced by him being a skilled polo player, a sport that had been the legacy of the British Raj in India. His passion for the role as Chief Military Observer was further demonstrated through the development of what was referred to as the Blue Book, which was partly an administrative directive to observers, providing information on local conditions and instructions in the form of reports. The book also included background material on the dispute in Kashmir, together with information on current Indian, Pakistani, and UN positions. Copies of the book were provided to the forces of Pakistan and India with the hope that observers would achieve some uniformity in their approach and that the two opposing forces would better understand the observers' actions. The first group of military observers in Kashmir were from the United States, Belgium, Canada, Norway and Mexico, Sweden and Denmark. And from the very beginning, Nimmo had assumed that Australia would also be a military observer contributor as well. And by late 1951, the United Nations had made a formal request for Australian Army officers, and by the end of 52, Australia's contribution to the operation had risen to 10 officers. While his command was small, he was vigilant against unnecessary numbers of military observers, which, as well as being a drain on the contributing countries, would also sap morale as observers found themselves with too little to do. What Nimmo did ensure was that the UN operation, with its limited resources, did as good a job as possible in preserving the uneasy peace in Kashmir. 3 years after arriving in Kashmir, Nimmo had reached the Australian Army's statutory retirement age of 60. Extensions were at the discretion of the United Nations Secretary General. Fortunately, Nimmo was so highly regarded by the UN that his extension continued. What Nimmo had brought to the UN group as a chief military observer was a supreme understanding of what could be possible to achieve through maintaining an open and firm but tactful relationship with both belligerent parties, yet showing no favour to either. Nimmo stated in his Blue Book to incoming military observers that tact is more of a virtue here. Satisfaction with Nimmo was high, and the United Nations had no thoughts of replacing him. However, in 1953, on his way to New York for consultations, he suffered a heart attack and was out of action for several months. During this time, the acting chief observer was Nimmo's chief of staff, the Australian Colonel Alec MacDonald. However, due to the United Nations' desire to have an officer of general rank heading UNMAGIP, the Belgian Major General Bennett Louis de Ridder stepped in as acting chief observer during his convalescence. Following Nimmo's return to duty, de Ridder remained with the group. While Nimmo was happy for de Ridder to be appointed to the mission as a temporary measure, he became concerned that there were now two officers of general rank in UNMAGIP, therefore blurring his position as commander. To remedy this, the UN officials made a suggestion to the Australian Office of External Affairs to have Nimmo promoted, and the Australian Minister for Defence was pleased to agree. Nimmo was accordingly granted the honorary rank of Lieutenant General in November 1954, coincidentally the fourth anniversary of his arrival in Kashmir. During 1954, the United States government had agreed to provide military aid to Pakistan, and the Indian government naturally reacted angrily to this and asserted that the American United Nations observers attached to the unit could no longer be considered neutral. The then United Nations Secretary General, Dag Hammarskjöld, his first reaction was to write Nimmo, reaffirming to the strongest possible terms the neutrality which was expected of UN military observers. Hammarskjöld also reminded Nimmo of military observers' responsibilities to safeguard any military information that is normally transmitted to a UN field observer team by the local army command. Consequently, the United Nations agreed that the American observers, who made up nearly half of UNMAGIP's observers, would be steadily withdrawn. In Kashmir during the majority of the 1950s, there were less than 100 alleged ceasefire line and border violations reported each year. In 1954, through discussions with Nimmo and representatives of the United Nations Secretariat, conditions along the border were relatively tranquil, with no more than 20 incidents. By 1961, however, the number of incidences had grown from 24 to 2,000. In 1965, Pakistan was despairing of the United Nations to not do anything to alter the status quo in Kashmir. In 1965, fighting broke out in a desolate marshy area of the Indian-Pakistani border, well south of Kashmir, known as the Kutch. Internal unrest, ranging from non-violent opposition to the Indian government to full-scale acts of terrorism, were on the increase in the Indian-controlled Kashmir. Having agreed to a ceasefire in the Kutch area, Indian government found themselves under pressure to take a tougher line in Kashmir. Consequently, on August 1965, the Indian government announced the abandonment of the 1949 ceasefire. Fighting erupted along the ceasefire line, and the Indian army seized key passes on the Pakistani side. Pakistan retaliated with a major attack in the Jammu area. By September 1965, the fighting in the Kashmir region intensified to become an all-out war between India and Pakistan. Britain and the United States immediately announced a cessation of military aid to both nations, whilst the threat of a border conflict with China, Pakistan's ally, further encouraged India to end the fighting. United Nations Secretary General, with his report to the United Nations Security Council on the 3rd of September 1965, pointed out that Nimmo had received 2,231 complaints from both sides of the conflict. The Security Council demanded a ceasefire implemented on the 23rd of September 1965 as Soviet-mediated discussions in Tashkent led to an end to hostilities and a resumption of normal relations. These negotiations did not deal with the Kashmir problem. A separate United Nations India-Pakistan Observer Mission, or UNIPOM, operated from September 1965 until February 1966, supervising the ceasefire and withdrawal of forces along the border at the end of the Second India-Pakistan War. Australia provided three observers, one seconded from the United Nations Troops Supervision Organization, or UNSO, and two seconded from UNMAGIP. Nimmo was included as part of UNIPOM until October 1965. Regrettably, the Kashmir dispute between India and Pakistan was set to continue for many years, outlasting Nimmo's command. Over a period of 15 years, Nimmo had performed the role of chief military observer in Kashmir admirably and with great accord. In 1964, an Australian diplomat in New York reported that the United Nations Secretariat considered Nimmo to have been by far the most successful United Nations observer ever. This was largely due to his ability to have all complaints investigated promptly and in detail and to give awards with complete impartiality. It was because of this highly respected position of Nimmo that there was never any pressure from the United Nations to withdraw him from command. Nimmo himself did not even seek retirement, only death would end Nimmo's command. Lieutenant General Robert Harold Nimmo, CBE, died in his sleep on the 4th of January 1966 of a heart attack at Rawalpindi, Pakistan, at the age of 72. His death may have been accelerated by the pressures associated with the 1965 war. Nimmo was the first Australian to command a multinational peacekeeping force, and at 15 years and 2 months, his command of Unmungip remains the longest ever command of a UN operation. His funeral was held at St. John's Cathedral in Brisbane, and the gun carriage carrying his coffin was led by a 500-strong guard of honour. His funeral was also attended by senior representatives of both India and Pakistan, the testament of his influence on both countries. He was survived by his second wife Mary, their 2 children, Robert and Catherine, and Anne from his first marriage. He is commemorated on Panel 1 of the Operational Service Roll of Honour in the commemorative area of the Australian War Memorial, where he has the distinction of being the oldest person to qualify for inclusion. General Nimmo's legacy of command over such an extended period of time and in trying conditions is inspirational. Nimmo demonstrated many leadership qualities that are a legacy of experience, in addition had a natural flair that is developed on the battlefield, and his experience is taught extensively to UN peacekeepers to this day. Nimmo was a veteran of 2 world wars, had combat command experience at many levels from the very junior to the most senior, had experience as part of an occupying power, and also had the experience of commanding conditions other than combat operations, as was the case when Nimmo led his brigade into Japan as part of the BKOF following the Second World War. It could have said that history prepared Nimmo for the ultimate role in his military career, that of Chief Military Observer, as no other period in Australian military history could have placed the requisite stress and forced preparation onto Nimmo to facilitate his command, experience, and leadership roles that he held in his later career. Additionally, Nimmo had and maintained a vision of what Unmungip was present in Kashmir to achieve, and this was evident by his continued extension of service within the United Nations. Nimmo's Blue Book for Unmungip Military Observers was a further testament of his broad understanding of the international political landscape. Nimmo's ability at polo and sport in general also bestowed upon him credibility during the mission, as he was able to interact with the local population in and around Kashmir, and the reputation Nimmo had of a model of firmness, tact, and silence satisfied the leadership virtues and patience of sensitivity. But Nimmo was fortunate when having such an active service in 2 global conflicts and the command experience to prepare for his role in this operation. And for that, the world is eternally grateful. And there you have it. That was the life, service, and legacy of Robert Harold Nimmo, someone few people would probably have any idea of. Most of this week's episode came from the UN's training manual dedicated to Nimmo himself, which is why it sounded a little differently. As for podcast recommendations, I have just started listening to the Hard Tack podcast from the Historical Studies Military History Group. They have a platform of listener engagement to further knowledge of military history. As always, a link will be in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time. Thanks for listening to the I Was Only Doing My Job podcast, a Doc Network production. This episode was written, produced, and audio engineered by me, Ross Manuel, with additional research done by Laurie Favell. I'd really appreciate it, and it would help out the show, if you took some time to share this with a friend, or leave a review on Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or iTunes, or anywhere that you listen to podcasts, as it really helps other people find the show. If you want to know more about today's episode, with photos, show notes, and transcripts, head to www.thedocnetwork.net and follow the show on IWODMJ on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Don't worry, there's a link in the show notes. If you want to follow me for history-related hijinks and other nerdery, you can follow me on practically everything at Doc Winters. Once again, thanks for listening and catch you next time. Bye!